You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 115. Today's episode is the third in a three-part series I'm doing about New Orleans music. The New Orleans Historic Collection recently did an online tournament where they matched New Orleans music against each other in a kind of March Madness-style bracket that they called Music Madness. People were invited to vote, and they published the results online, while also linking to the launch of their online exhibit called New Orleans Medley, Sounds of the City. Eli Haddo and Teresa Devlin over at THNOC suggested it might be fun if I filled out my own bracket and talked about the selections. And boy, did I not realize what a rabbit hole it was going to be. Today, I'm going to cover my final picks, but I'm also going to be joined by the curator who put the bracket challenge together. If you missed episodes 113 and 114, you might want to stop and give those a listen first. Today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters, including our newest member at the $10 a month level, Kate Welsh. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter like Kate. To find out more, go over to beyondbourbonst.com/Patreon, and we'll have a link in the show notes, too. We're also supported by our Beyond Bourbon Street partners like NOLA Boards, Coast Roast Coffee, and NOLA T-shirt of the month. Head over to the show notes again at beyondbourbonst.com/115 to find links and discount codes. And last but not least, today's show is brought to you by my friend Liz Wood. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. And look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be a bit overwhelming. Liz makes that process fun and easy. And not only that, the thing that sets her apart, as I've seen when she's helped members of my community, is what she does after she helps you find a home. Liz does a great job at building community, getting you connected with the people in your area, and making sure you're doing well as you get your feet under you in New Orleans. When you're ready to make New Orleans home, reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com. All right, with that, let's jump into part three of the discussion about my Music Madness bracket. As I mentioned earlier, I have a special guest. He's a curator at the New Orleans Historic Collection, and he's an alumnus of the show. Welcome to the show, Mr. Eric Seifrith. How are you, Eric?
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me back. I'm good. Glad to be here. Excited to talk more about the bracket. I hope you won't be too hard on me. I know you've got some thoughts on some of the matchups, so I'm ready to chat.
You know, this has been a lot of fun. I had no idea the rabbit hole that I was going to be going down, and I'm sure for you as well. Before we get into some of the picks, let's talk a little bit about the idea and the construction of this whole challenge. How did it come about, Eric?
Sure. So, you know, we really started talking about doing this kind of bracket style engagement program during the first few weeks of the kind of stay-at-home period dealing with the COVID pandemic. We're trying to figure out what different ways we could engage with our audience. And one thing we were doing was building a virtual version of an exhibition that I had worked on, New Orleans Medley Sounds of the City, which was actually a physical exhibition that was on display in our Williams Research Center for the same spot that the Storyville exhibition was, which we, you know, talked about. And we had our photographers go in and create a 360 view of that space. And we started working to build this virtual exhibition where you go into that exhibition and walk around essentially virtually, kind of like you would do, if you're doing a home tour on one of these online websites or, you know, Google Street View, that kind of thing. And so we were working on that, and we wanted to figure out a way to kind of build out the content in that at the same time. So these things all kind of coalesced and came together. And, it was around March, I guess it was mid-March when all this started happening. I know they had just canceled the NCAA tournament. And so brackets were on our minds. And I am certainly a sports fan and like talking about, you know, I always fill out a bracket for the NCAA, and you know, we have, you know, we talk about that at work too. So it was on our minds, and we figured out a way to do it. You know, some of our team members that were looking at different engagement opportunities. So it kind of came about that way. And then, you know, I was thrilled. I was like, yes, please let me fill this out. I would love to. And it was just a blast doing it. I will say, you know, those guys are tough over in marketing, Eli and Teresa, and some of our programming team members. You know, I was like, well, I wanted to include, you know, 100 songs or something, you know, because it was so hard to get down to 64 songs that really made sense in my mind for the project. And but they're like, no, we really need to stick to 64. So they you know, my work was cut out for me. But that's kind of how it came about, and it was just an absolute blast to put it together.
Well, when they first pitched the idea to me, they said, oh, it's only going to be like 32 songs. It won't be that bad.
Yeah, that's kind of what they came to me with too, you know, and I said, no, I can't do that. You know, I think I go through my notes. I had so many different versions and like songs that I had to like cross off. And each time I did, it really pained me because the songs were in there for different reasons too. You know, like, I wasn't just, it's not a list of my favorite 64 New Orleans songs, you know, and it kind of corresponds with the exhibit too. So I do encourage people, the New Orleans Medley exhibit's up there. Take a look. It's a lot of fun to go. I mean, it's kind of just fun to go into the space and move yourself around, but you can see all the items too. And we've got a jukebox in there to listen to, and some neat videos, some of which are songs that are in the bracket, like that we have the Ha music video. Mm-hmm. We have video of Big Frida. We've got LPO video. It's really pretty neat, neat thing.
Yeah. And we'll put a link to the online exhibit in our show notes, which will be at beyondbourbonst.com/115. We'll also link to things we talk about, like the playlist on Spotify and on YouTube, where people can go back through and listen to it and create their own brackets, my bracket as well. And also, you mentioned the last time you and I were together was a couple of years ago on episode 35, where we did a show called Madam's Music and Musicians of Storyville, which tied into an exhibit y'all had at that time. And again, very heavy on the music episode, music emphasis.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of crossover, right? A lot of the songs and the music we talked about back then and that you guys had in that exhibit show up here in the bracket.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I should say congratulations. You're well over 100 episodes now. I'm you know, that's quite an accomplishment. That show was a lot of fun. One of kind of part of that exhibition that I really focused on was the kind of the music aspect. So, you know, the show was the exhibition, which I call a show, but I'm trying to discern between your show and anyway, sure. Storyville Madams and Music. That was the title of our exhibition. And we tried to kind of do a little bit of social history, you know, with what was going on with the people in Storyville, but also the economics of it. And then the music, you know, what did it sound like in that neighborhood, which was really a couple neighborhoods? And the answer, excuse me, turned out to be, it sounded like a lot of different things. There's a lot of music there, you know, and anytime there's I think a neighborhood rich with music and rich with venues where people are performing, there's going to be lots of different styles. And that's one of the things we tried to build out. And you see a lot of the musicians we talked about in that show. Certainly Jelly Roll Morton shows up in the bracket. I don't know if we got into Kid Ory too much. Louis Armstrong shows up in the bracket. Buddy Bolden, certainly. So some of these early jazz musicians crossed over.
Well, and I wondered, and that kind of takes us to the bracket. You know, you had 64 songs, 32 matchups there. And I wondered about the tie-in. One of the things I took away from that discussion a couple of years ago was that in Storyville, not only would you hear the music we today associate with jazz, but you would hear music of the world because that's what the patrons expected. And it jumped out at me that one of the things you all said in that discussion, you all talked about opera and different things like that. And I wondered, the very first pick or the very first song in the playlist in the bracket is Bambula by Gottschalk.
Right.
And I wondered how much that tied into. Is that a song that would have been heard? Obviously, that song predates Storyville, but would that kind of music have been heard in Storyville?
I mean, likely, yes. You know, Bambula, this piece by Gottschalk, was written and popularized in the middle part of the 19th century, right? He passes away in the late 1860s and is just an endlessly fascinating character. If anyone wants to go down, talk about rabbit holes, but into reading about Gottschalk, he dies in Rio de Janeiro during a piano concert, just to give you a little teaser. Fascinating character from New Orleans. That piece, the Bambula, would have been popular, like I'm saying, in the mid-19th century. So would, you know, I don't know if it still would have had the popularity by, you know, 50 years later, or if it had waned a little bit. I haven't seen any specific evidence of it being played,
sure,
but it certainly would have been known, you know, and it certainly could have been one of the pieces that people heard there. And I think you're right. I think that people came in, especially in these large brothels. And that's one of the things I try to differentiate when talking about Storyville, is the diversity of space there. You know, on Basin Street, you had these huge brothels with these piano professors like Jelly Roll Morton or Manuel Mineta, who could play anything, Tony Jackson, you know, and they would have known Bambula. I'm sure they could have pulled out a little bit if someone wanted to hear it, known some opera overtures, and you know, also been able to play ragtime. And so if it was played, it probably would have been played there rather than kind of in some of the smaller houses, or, you know, there are these venues too where these guys were playing at 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning just for themselves, having these cutting contests and bringing, sure, out, you know, kind of their chops and their, you know, more avant-garde music. So, but I wanted to start with a little bit of kind of classical, you know, what we think of classical. And so I have Gottschalk. I also have Basil Barres in there, who's another 19th century composer, another fascinating individual. He was born enslaved to a piano store owner. We think his first piece of music is published while he is still enslaved, which is, I think, the only known case of that happening. Wow. He, after emancipation, ends up running the store. He ends up being an internationally known performer and composer. He actually performs in Paris at their 1867 World Exposition, contemporary of Gottschalk's. And I mean, I should say that what they're writing and performing, they're popular musicians. We think of them in that classical vein now because you hear the piano,
right,
and like, it doesn't sound like our popular music, but it was popular. It wasn't high classical, like, you know, orchestra music. You know, I think Gottschalk has a couple orchestra pieces, but he's much more known for his popular piano works. But I wanted to start as far back as I could with some of these songs that we know. You know, I mean, there's music going back farther, obviously, in New Orleans. We talk about that in Medley, but Gottschalk and Basil Barres were two kind of a good getting off point. And I wanted something that somebody might recognize, you know, like, if nobody, sure, knows what I'm talking about, it doesn't really do, it's not much fun, right? So that's kind of why I started with those two guys.
Well, and for me, it wasn't a song that I knew. I didn't know who Gottschalk was. I now know he was extremely popular. He was born in New Orleans, even though he spent a lot of his time outside of the U.S. The thing that interested me about him and about that song is the song, at least, was he was thinking about Congo Square. And it's certainly possible in the time that he lived that he could have gone to Congo Square. And then as you circle through so much of New Orleans music and certainly the matchups that you created, many, many of them go right back to the origins, if not directly in Congo Square, certainly in the Treme. And then just, you know, as you mentioned about Storyville in that area as well, and Black Storyville into what we now know as the Central Business District. But it's all really, really close to that. You know, if there's a birthplace of music in New Orleans, it's Congo Square. And here you are, he lived at 518 Conti Street. So just, you know, blocks away.
Yeah.
And so that was, I didn't know anything about him. And I was just sort of, as I dug into it, I was like, wow, that's a neat way to start. As you went through, and I don't know how we'll weave in my picks a little bit here and there. People can obviously see it online. You paired him up against Lonnie Johnson. And so, and very different style of music, right? Lonnie Johnson, probably directly tied to the birth of jazz, or as close as it comes. But that track, Tomorrow Night, is guitars and vocals set against this very sort of, I don't know, older, slightly more formal piano-based piece. What was the thought of starting there with that matchup?
Sure. Let me just say that I love Lonnie Johnson. And that song, Tomorrow Night, may be my personal favorite that's on the bracket. I just his guitar work and the vocals and the story he's telling just weave together this kind of melancholy lament of love lost and love never, you know, not really ever existing. And it's I just love that song, and I really encourage people to listen to it. I think I really like that matchup, and I the reason why is kind of underlines one of my objectives in doing the bracket, and that was to pull out as many different types of musics and different types of musicians that arguably could be called New Orleans music and New Orleans musicians, and put them in the same space so that they could occupy, you know, the listener's mind at the same time. And we could really think about what it is that New Orleans music is and really understand how varied it is, because it's so incredibly rich. There are so many different types and strains. And if you look through, you know, look, I'm biased, you're biased, our listeners are probably biased, but New Orleans, is there another place in the country that has impacted the nation's music more so? And I don't think there is. I mean, if you just look at, you know, the New Orleans is, you know, where jazz comes out of New Orleans, right? This first unique American art form. Rock and roll, New Orleans plays a huge part in the development of rhythm and blues and rock and roll. And then, you know, you kind of go up and you can see the influence of New Orleans hip hop styles and bounce. And so these are so many different types of music, and they were all so impactful nationally and internationally with someone like Gottschalk or with jazz. So I wanted to put them next to each other sometimes and get these styles and musicians in the same place. And we could kind of see this richness that way. So I like that they kind of got paired together, and they sound very different. They're very different songs. Lonnie Johnson isn't a guy, for whatever reason, that is really remembered as a New Orleans musician. Mm-hmm. He kind of leaves town. I mean, his story is heartbreaking. His family is devastated by the flu in 1918-1919. He kind of loses everybody, and he ends up leaving town. But he played in Storyville. As a jazz guitar player, he also played a lot of blues, and this song is kind of it's got your blues sound with some jazz chords and jazz rhythms. It's a really neat pairing of kind of the two styles. But I guess the other thing that I really need to say here is about how these matchups came about, because to go back into my process, I didn't exactly pair each matchup up for the matchup. But what I did to really look at like a, to make this as much like a NCAA bracket as I could, is I made my picks, my top 64 songs. These are the songs that are going to be in the bracket. I then kind of arranged them into f- four regions, gave them seeds based on what I thought people would vote for. So not my favorite, not what I thought was most important, but my, you know, idea of what New Orleanians who what would participate in our bracket might vote for. So I didn't think people would know Lonnie Johnson. I didn't think they knew the song Tomorrow Night. That's one of the reasons I was excited to include it. So it was the 16 seed in the bracket, and Gottschalk was number one, because I know there are a lot of people that still talk a lot about Gottschalk, talk a lot about the Bambula. And so he was the number one in kind of my older music region. I personally called this region the French Opera House region. It's kind of like New Orleans classics. It kind of became somewhat of a grab bag too. Some of the other ones are a little bit more focused. Sure. But so that's kind of how those two songs came together.
That's fun, because as I was going through it, and like you, I love NCAA March Madness. I fill out brackets every year. I kept sort of wanting to know what the regions were, because I went through it without, I didn't look at the online bracket. I didn't look at the results. I didn't look head to toe. I just started through them and took them as they were presented to me. And when you do that, it does start to feel, the matchups kind of come to life, and then you start to, whether it was intentional on your part or not, I think it probably was, you move in a time progression. So you start with Gottschalk, probably the earliest song in the bunch, and then as you get later, you're presented with Stand Up and Get Crunk, real popular among Saints fans, and then you get into Bounce, or before that even Rap and Bounce, and there was a neat linear progression through not only styles of music as they came out in New Orleans and elsewhere, but also in progression of careers. So, you know, we'll get into that when we get down into talking about Juvenile and Manny Fresh and Big Frida. But it certainly felt that way as a participant. And I was just taking them as they came up. So it was, you know, we won't go through for the sake of time every single one, but just the next two, you take Sidney Bechet, a classic clarinetist. I'm a very poor clarinetist, but a clarinetist, against Little Liza Jane and the Mardi Gras Indian tradition, which comes up repeatedly in your bracket. And I just thought, boy, that's not fair. And at the same time, you talk about two different distinct sounds and parts of our culture. Was it hard for you to figure out the matchups, or once you had done the regions, it just sort of all fell together for you?
Yeah, I mean, the hardest part for me was to get to those songs and feel like I wasn't overlooking anybody I wanted to include, or any type of style, or, you know, so getting in like these more traditionals, getting in the Mardi Gras Indian tradition, gotta have Bechet, you know, gotta have something for him. And, you know, he's less aligned with kind of these traditional New Orleans songs. I mean, and he played a lot of his career was actually over in Paris. And quite frankly, he felt, I think he felt more at home over there than he did in New Orleans and in the United States, partly because of the racism he was, you know, faced with over here, partly for some troubles he had with some legal issues he had as a younger man. But the point is, you know, someone like Armstrong and Bechet they're often put, you know, talked about in the same breath as these first important jazz soloists, because jazz goes from this, and I'm going a little bit off topic here, but it goes from this music that is always played together. It's one of its core principles is this heterophony, right? All these instruments playing at the same time. And it develops into this music we know now, which is so focused on solos and soloists, right? And Bechet and Armstrong are kind of known as the two guys who really push that forward as some of the first soloists. A great pair, one's an Afro-Creole, one an African-American from different sides of Canal Street, from different musical traditions. One playing the clarinet and saxophone, the other the cornet and trumpet. But, you know, Armstrong is tied into all these classic New Orleans songs that you see on the bracket. You know, I mean, he played like all of them, you know, so I tried not to use him as the example for every single YouTube clip, but he basically could have been, you know, and Bechet a little bit less so. But I knew I needed him in there. So it was about picking kind of my favorite one of his classics. And then just Little Liza Jane, I feel like, is this traditional that, like you said, is You hear it. It's one of these Mardi Gras Indian songs. And it's just one of these songs that you hear when you're out on the streets at parades of any kind in New Orleans. It's, you know, the brass bands play it. And I just have this kind of, it seems like one of these songs that's just part of the city's, you know, celebratory kind of outdoor culture. And it felt like it needed to be in there too, even though I can't pinpoint it as like, you know, how does it belong? Where does it come from? You know, and it's a song that people know all over the country. You know, I knew it, and I grew up, I'll admit, here in Indianapolis before coming to New Orleans many years ago. And I, you know, it's one of the songs on here I knew very well, but be that as it may, I think in New Orleans, it has a little bit more of an importance. And mm-hmm. I saw that with the voting. People voted it forward for a couple of rounds. I don't remember exactly how far it got, but it beat Bashe in the opening round. And it's interesting, right? It's interesting to see that. Like, what do people prefer and what do they associate with? And Bashe, I think, you know, as important as he is nationally and internationally and as a jazz figure, he got beat. So it's kind of interesting.
I think Mardi Gras Indian culture runs really strong here and maybe now more popularly than ever. You know, it obviously always in New Orleans, since it was created, has been strong in the African American community. But with the advent of things like Super Sunday and the Indians coming out of their neighborhoods a little bit, opportunities on St. Joseph's Day night, you know, some people are more familiar, and we'll talk about the Wild Chapatulas later, certainly helped. But for me, it was just these early matchups were really interesting. You also alluded to it. One of the things I would encourage people to do, the Spotify list is great, but I really enjoyed the YouTube list because it's also easy to then go down a particular rabbit hole. So you hear, again, I promise we won't go through every one, but you, in the next matchup, you have Just a Closer Walk with Thee, which again, kind of a related but different genre, subgenre, right? Of funeral music. I think the one in your list was the one with Mahalia Jackson at the Newport Jazz Festival. And of course, Louis Armstrong comes on stage. There's so many tie-ins there, not only the two of them, but the gentleman that runs the Newport Jazz Festival later that same year launches the New Orleans Jazz Festival with Quint Davis. But I could just as easily have seen you pull the Doreen Ketchin's version of A Closer Walk with Thee performed in the cathedral, which is amazing, right? And then, you know, so not even with the matchups, but just the choices of performances of a given song. And those two that I'm mentioning, very, very different. Doreen, who is amazing for people listening, plays on the street, on Royal Street, right near the historic New Orleans collection, performed with the Louisiana Philharmonic, I think it was, in the cathedral. So you have these two gigantic performances, 50 years apart, just of that one song. And again, there in this instance, you had it against Goodnight Irene by Lead Belly, which again, I'm sure another really important person in the history of New Orleans music that had to be included. But I just love that you, on any given song or most of these, you can go in and hear several different versions. And I'm jumping way ahead, but for instance, the Stand Up and Get Crunk, you chose to use the one, I think, by Rebirth. Rebirth? Soul Rebels, maybe.
Soul Rebels, I think. Mm-hmm.
And the one played in the dome is by the Ying Yang Twins.
Yeah, well, I couldn't include that for the North.
You can include an Atlanta group. So for me, that was intriguing. If that was your intent, it certainly came through. These choices were hard and they were varied. I'm looking. Let's see. As we go in, St. James Infirmary. It's been performed so many different ways by so many musicians. That was one where I think it was against La Belle Creole, which I think is a terrific song that a lot of people don't know. But and there you go with Basil Barres that you were talking about. St. James Infirmary is known all over. You had a nod to LSU with the Tiger Rag. That was a quick pass for me because it's so known. But then I thought it was interesting as you got into, I kept finding myself picking against Louis Armstrong, which was interesting to me, but it was because of, you're right, Louis Armstrong is present in many, many of these songs, but either different versions or just sort of for something different?
So with the YouTube playlist, I kind of tried to continue the work of showing different musicians, right? Showing as many different musicians as I could, and including because there's so many that should be heard and listened to, and not just should be, but you'll enjoy it immensely if you kind of go down these rabbit holes and listen to these different versions. And with some of these songs, they're not necessarily really associated with one person, you know.
Sure.
You know, something like "Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans?" Now, there's this performance with Armstrong and Holiday from the New Orleans film, right, 1947. But who hasn't played that song, you know, right? Or same with St. James Infirmary, you know, who hasn't done that? That's a New Orleans musician. So I tried where I could. If there was an obvious kind of like person that owned that song, or, you know,
sure,
quote unquote owned that song, I tried to give the nod to them. But otherwise, I really wanted to show some of the different musicians. And then, of course, I mean, it's you know, YouTube's got what YouTube has, and some of the some of the versions aren't as good as others. The same thing with the Spotify. If you go through, if you look at Spotify and YouTube lists together, they're not the same, and that's just based basically on the limitations of the platforms, but it also gives you another chance to listen to different versions of these songs. And there's so many wonderful versions. I think with Armstrong and the voting, there's a little bit of kind of, you know, it's almost like if you can continue the sports analogies, you know, like I think the voters get tired of the same person being the best all the time, right? You know, like
right.
LeBron James probably should have 10 MVP awards, but he has what, like, two or something, you know. It's, I think, a similar thing. It's like, yeah, sure, well, I know Armstrong has done this song, he's the greatest, you know, we don't need to talk about it, let's just kind of move along. And I think, you know, there's kind of that approach, I think, sometimes with some of the voting. I mean, that's just kind of my take on it. I don't know, what do you think?
I think so, because I found myself doing that a little bit, right? After I went through the first round, I was a little more conscious of that, and sort of thinking about, the matchup of certainly not his most famous song, but Louis Armstrong, Sleepy Time Down South against Burgundy Street Blues. Louis Armstrong was really criticized. That wasn't a popular song, you know, and you think through the lens of today, you know, lots of African-American stereotypes in that song. And at the same time, it helped popularize Armstrong beyond New Orleans. I love, in that case, he goes against George Lewis, who's a clarinetist, again, close to my heart. George Lewis was the head of the Prez Hall Jazz Band. And Burgundy Street Blues, it also ties in this real local, anybody not in New Orleans sees that word and pronounces it differently than we pronounce it here.
Yeah.
And so for me, there was some nostalgia there and knowing a little bit of the history. And I think you're right. I think that it was a little surprising at first. Some of the songs that made it through the bracket were pretty predictable. Iko Iko, terrific song, but not surprising. But then you did see, I think, that idea of maybe some Armstrong fatigue set in. It's also why I liked that you had, again, almost every song could be tied to Armstrong, but you seemed to go in a different direction when you could. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that because it took me down rabbit holes that I maybe would not have. I was fascinated by, you have Wolverine Blues, which is a Jelly Roll Morton song, against Just a Gigolo. And people of a certain age know Just a Gigolo from David Lee Roth,
right?
But Just a Gigolo is a Louis Prima song mixed in with I Ain't Got Nobody. And I think an awful lot of people know who Louis Prima was and probably know his daughter today, but certainly not as wide today. You know, when you get out of New Orleans, most people would know David Lee Roth. And I thought, boy, that's a nice, it takes people down a rabbit hole. And I'm sure there were some people that listened that's how they discovered Louis Prima in this, you know, in this matchup.
Mm-hmm. That was a funny one. That was one of the kind of funny matchups that came about from my rankings, you know, of these songs. And in that case, my rankings, it happened to be very far off of the mark. Although, you know, you always get some upsets. But And to be fair, I kind of, you know, massaged some of these rankings when it created a good first rounder. But I'm looking at my notes. These both come from kind of my New Orleans Jazz bracket, my New Orleans mm-hmm. Jazz region. The number one seed in that region is When the Saints Go Marching In. So if you're looking at the bracket online, whenever you get to that matchup that's When the Saints Go Marching In versus Livery Stable Blues, that's the beginning of this next region. I had Wolverine Blues as a 4 seed, and Just a Gigolo then would have been the 13 seed. You know, I needed to include Prima. I had to have him in there. I had to have a representative of kind of the, you know, the Italian, Sicilian, American, New Orleanian jazz tradition. He's, you know, one of the most well-known, but certainly not the only musician coming out of that line. To me, that's, I mean, I don't know if there's, that's one of the songs that's most kind of thought of, I think, when you think of Louis Prima. Mm-hmm. Obviously his work in the Jungle Book, but you know, I think that that song, Just a Gigolo with Ain't Got Nobody. And as soon as you said, I you know, I completely forgot about the David Lee Roth version, but I can't get that out of my head now. Just
sorry for that.
But they're great songs. I mean, that's why, you know, and man, talk about two performers that have an overflowing amount of energy and charisma, right? When you think of Roth and Prima, but you know, Jelly Roll with Wolverine Blues, you know, he's one of these guys that is the first generation jazz man, claims to be the originator, has all this, you know. I think, you know, you could talk about Jelly Roll and his contributions for, you know, a full episode, but I'll just say this. I think one of what he maybe should be known for as much as anything is being one of the first jazz composers. He publishes music very on, with the kind of Stark Publishing, are a couple of white guys, brothers, who essentially slap their names on his sheet music and steal it. Essentially, they're the publishers, but they take most of the royalties. There used to be a thing you could do where basically you put your name as a co-composer and say words by, you know, and so they put words by, you know, one of the Stark brothers, and there aren't any worse Jelly Roll songs, you know, and effectively take, you know, half of the royalties. And this, I'm going down my own rabbit hole here, but it ended up, you know, Jelly Roll was trying to recoup that money for until he died. But great, great composer, composes some amazing big band pieces like Gan Jam that are a few decades later. But Wolverine Blues is kind of one of his early hits, one of the songs that he is known by in those early years of his career, and I love it, and I love his piano work. He always talks about adding the Spanish tinge to his music, which is you know, kind of that habanera rhythm that he imparts to it, which gives it, makes it sound kind of like jazz, if I can't put it any other way, you know. And he says in some of his interviews, he says, you know, he makes it clear, jazz isn't a style of music, it's a style of performance. It's how you play a song. If you haven't listened to, there are some amazing Library of Congress interviews that Alan Lomax, I want to say, did with Jelly Roll. Listen to them. They're amazing. He goes in and out between talking about his life and then performing a song. And he's a great raconteur, and he spins some tales, you know, truthful or not, I don't know, I don't care. They're just amazing. And that song is a great song. So I was, you know, had to have Jelly Roll. That's the one, you know, and there's some subjectivity in these choices. A lot of them are songs I just, you know, happen to really like too.
Of course. If I can find easily the links to those interviews at the Library of Congress, I'll put them in the show notes. I really liked the, You talk about that progression. A little later on, you had a matchup that I loved between Basin Street Blues and King Porter Stomp. And that King Porter Stomp is another good example where you can hear that different progression than some of the earlier jazz standards in the list, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's called the Stomp progression, if I remember. But it's like an 8-bar chord. It's a very kind of, it's almost, you hear and feel the what later becomes funk. You know, you start to feel that syncopation in it. And that particular matchup is set against Basin Street Blues, which is, you know, not only recorded by Armstrong, but later people like Miles Davis and Sam Cooke, Cab Calloway, Harry Connick Jr. And so you sort of can feel the difference between a sort of what we think of today, at least as a more traditional jazz versus, again, King Porter Stomp. To me, I imagine that if Alan Toussaint were alive, and we could talk to him about 70s music and that migration into funk that the Meters and the Nevilles are known for, there's probably a direct tie-in to Jelly Roll Morton and the King Porter Stomp, kind of, I think. You can hear it, and you can hear it in Wolverine Blues, too, that unique progression.
Yeah, and there's these rhythms, and the, you know, people call them all different types of things, you know, the second line beat, the New Orleans rhythm, you know, whatever. But there's, you know, Jelly Roll talks about the Spanish tinge. But a lot of times it comes back to kind of the habanera and different versions of it. You know, the tresolo is another version of it. You kind of take this standard beat and let it inform some of what you do in different ways. The other thing is that by and large, New Orleans music, and this isn't, you know, this isn't true 100% of the time, but a lot of New Orleans music is dance music. And you get that with jazz, right? Jazz is dance music. Traditional New Orleans jazz was, these were guys playing in clubs and brothels for people to dance to. You know, a stomp is a dance song. That's what it is. And that's what they're referencing with the title. You know, and there are other, you know, there are other types of songs from that period, like a slow drag. That's a dance song. It's title of the song or the style is referencing the type of dance you might do. You go through, I mean, what is rhythm and blues and rock and roll if not dance music? Now, I mean, they get, you know, all these styles get corrupted a little bit. You know, Basin Street Blues, great song. One of my favorites, one I thought might win. Not really a dance song, but that's where it comes from. And so you see those rhythms and the beat that drives a lot of these musics forward. Certainly hip hop and bounce, this is dance music, right? So that is kind of one of these underlying themes that I think you can see kind of going across. So I think you're absolutely right. I'd love, you know, I can just imagine Alan Toussaint playing, kind of going from King Porter Stomp into a Meter song, or what, you know, when it, like you can see those similarities play out, and I think you're absolutely right to point it out.
Yeah, there's just these threads, right? You could feel it whenever I couldn't decide. I close my eyes and listen to both again, and whichever one I seem to be bobbing my head to or tapping my foot is the one that won. And I did them over, you know, I didn't do them all in one sitting. And so sometimes I think mood comes into play, but that's true of this music as well, right? Some of this was played in Storyville. Some of it is played on the streets of New Orleans today during Indian parades. Some of it is played today during funerals, both the front part of the funeral, the procession, A Closer Walk with Thee comes to mind. And then the second line, the more raucous as they're celebrating someone's life, you know, afterwards. And I think that idea I hadn't associated directly with dance, but so much of that. And then as you jump way forward into the, you mentioned it, you start to get into the, you have this section, and I'm jumping around, but where you start to really introduce the, right up to the beginning of rock and roll. Right, where you got Fats Domino and Dave Bartholomew. Everyone knows Fats Domino, and I think people here know Dave Bartholomew, and I'm sure a lot of people do, but Fats is the name you think of. And of course, Fats and Dave Bartholomew were a team, you know, so important. And you start to get into several songs. At one point, you made about a 40 or 50 year jump where you were just right up against the origins of, or the popularity of rock and roll, right? Right leading into Elvis. And it was really fun to feel that change in the music. Even a song like Mother-in-Law, you know, and obviously we could do a whole episode about Ernie Cato and his wife. And you know, I now think it's more than poetic that Kermit Ruffins owns the Mother-in-Law Lounge. But all that music, you know, where you get into Good Rockin' Night. It's another one, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Which you have up against Hey Pocky Way. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you had to know or had to think, Hey Pocky Way is going to be a runaway hit there.
Yeah, Hey Pocky Way was my number 3 seed in that bracket. in that region. Yeah.
So yeah, I would have put that at a one or two. So we haven't gone through all my picks, and I'll figure out a way to summarize them. But when I got further down, I ended up with Hey Pocky Way against Go to the Mardi Gras.
Mm.
And I would not have like laid it out quite that way, and it's just the way that it fell. But you also had right in there Brother John by Wild Chapatulas. And I thought Wild Chapatulas, maybe if you could talk about them for a minute, such an important point. The first time the Neville brothers play together as a band, the four brothers.
Right. I think that there are kind of two things there, right? And that's the one thing, right? The Neville brothers coming together. I mean, Art had, you know, his Art's career starts. He's like a teenager playing shows, has a couple hits really early on. He's the oldest brother, but this is really the first time that group comes together. And then, of course, they're recording Mardi Gras Indian music, and it's this first kind of popularized recording of these songs that are Mardi Gras Indian songs. And the release is, go listen to it. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that album. It's incredible. You know the songs. I think it's really important for kind of those two reasons, and it popularized, which you talked about a little bit in the podcast about or maybe even just earlier in our conversation about Mardi Gras Indian music going from kind of something you wouldn't know if you weren't going to see the Indians to something you can see on St. Joseph's Night on Super Sunday, and it's just become more part of our widespread culture in New Orleans. So I think this album has a lot to do with that, and it has a lot to do with kind of the emergence of the Neville brothers at the same time.
Yeah, and I think particularly outside of the Black community, I think we probably don't have this discussion and this widespread knowledge of Mardi Gras Indian music without the Wild Chapatulas.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I also thought that particular song, you're right, that album is phenomenal. You know, never mind you have the Neville brothers, you got George Porter on the album. I love New Orleans to my core. It's why I have the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. It was recorded at Alan Toussaint's recording studios. It's got the call and response that people are familiar with now, the Giacomo Finanè. I think you also, you know, right at that time, Dr. John is exploding in popularity, and he's bringing in those sounds, and he knows all those folks. But this particular matchup, you have Brother John, really important for all those reasons, against the Fat Man, which many people say is the first rock and roll song. And it's recorded at Cosmo Matassa's studio on Rampart Street, which coincidentally, or maybe not, is across the street from Congo Square. So I just thought this one for me was sort of mind-blowing as a New Orleanian. I went with the Fat Man, but I just like kept playing it over and over and over because the significance of both of them is enormous.
Yeah, I don't know how you choose between that one. Some of these, I mean, are impossible choices. I think you're right. You listen to them, see how you're feeling right at that moment. But I mean, yeah, in terms of, you know, kind of the nerdier talking about historical important stuff, right, it's hard to make an argument that wins on either side. I mean, like you said, the Fat Man, you know, this is Fat's first hit, 1949, one of these first rock and roll songs. Good Rocking Tonight is another from Roy Brown and from 1947 that we kind of hold up as for these early rock and roll songs that recorded, like you said, at Cosimo's on Rampart Street in the midst of the height of Jim Crow segregation. I think that that it's not just happenstance that it's right there on Rampart Street across from Congo Square and the Treme. I think that space is kind of a liminal space between the tourist center of the city that is very protected in the 50s and 40s and 50s as a white space, particularly as a tourist space where there are a lot of, you know, African Americans there, but they're performers, you know, and they talk about not being able to walk down Bourbon Street, having to go through back and side doors, etc. But they're able to perform and to record at Cosimo's, which is owned by a Sicilian American, and they're across the street from Treme, right? They're halfway kind of between Treme, and that upper part of the quarter is also kind of an African American neighborhood. If you go down kind of, you know, around from Orleans, maybe to Iberville on some of those streets just in from Rampart, we know George Lewis lives over there, you know. It's a really interesting location, and I think it's really important. And the other thing you have here that you point out is kind of this lineage of these New Orleans producers and studios, right? So you go from Cosmos to and Dave Bartholomew, the producer on those records, to Alan Toussaint, right? Who writes, you know, every New Orleans song you've ever heard that you love from that era, usually under the name of his mom, Naomi Neville. And he records all this great music that comes out of the late 60s and 70s. And so there's this real progression there too of kind of popular, and I mean, Wild Chop Tools isn't rock and roll, you know, it's Mardi Gras Indian music, but it speaks to kind of the evolution of the recording industry in the city for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, I hope people are as excited about the music as you and I are. And of course, the backdrop of this is there doesn't need to be a winner, right? Like there is in the NCAA. What I got out of it was just an appreciation for music, some of it that I already knew and loved, and some of it I hadn't thought of in a while. And in some cases, particularly as we get later in the bracket, it caused me to dive into music that I hadn't listened to as much or the reason behind it, you know? So you kind of have what I think of as this little bit of transition where you go to the Mardi Gras and see you later, Alligator. Then we get into the Stand Up and Get Crunk against I Need a Hot Girl. And it was about at that moment when I realized we were making a transition and starting to get into rap and then bounce. And you just mentioned the Iberville Street. Well, you had the Iberville housing projects there, and housing projects play such an important part in the culture of New Orleans today, and certainly going back in the music and the art. But it takes a pretty hard turn if you're not paying attention in the brackets, where all of a sudden we've jumped forward again, another 20, 30 years. And you look up and realize, wait a minute, now we're talking about new music again, arguably a genre created or certainly heavily influenced in New Orleans. And the moment for me, you had, let's see, It's All Over Now by the Dirty Dozen with Dr. John, no less, a song that was also released by the Rolling Stones, one of their first hits, I think. And then it's up against DJ Jimmy and Where They At, which is, I think, I'm certainly no expert, but one of the very first bounce songs. And you just sort of get lulled into it. And all of a sudden, boom, now we're in the era of DJ Jimmy and Manny Fresh and Cash Money Rec. Was that a deliberate, or did it just sort of, you worked your brackets and it showed up there?
That's, you know, that was my, most contemporary region, right? And I had to include, and we had to talk about hip hop and bounce, and not just hip hop and bounce, but contemporary brass band music. So that's one of the reasons you see the Dirty Dozen there, you see Rebirth there. You know, on the one side, you get hip hop and bounce, this new black vernacular dance music, right? Which, and I say it that way to tie it directly back into jazz, right? Because that's what they both are, and they develop in really similar fashions. You know, jazz doesn't, there aren't housing projects in 1900 New Orleans, but they're, you know, Armstrong grows up in the area called the Battleground, not far from Black Storyville. These are generally impoverished neighborhoods, but where there is a really vibrant street culture and a vibrant community culture and vibrant music, right? A lot of the music comes through parties outside and through clubs and people pushing the envelope and trying to create their own unique sounds. And you see similarities coming out of the development of New Orleans bounce and hip hop, which, like, you know, like we said, is really, you know, I guess we can't claim ownership of hip hop as a genre, but we can certainly say that, you know, there's a huge influence coming out of New Orleans and bounce and Cash Money and guys like Juvenile and the Hot Boys, all you know, everyone in that group, Manny Fresh certainly, who is another line of kind of these behind the scenes producer types who just have so much influence over the music. But you also got to talk about the brass bands, because in New Orleans brass band history, there's kind of an inflection point in the 70s, and we like to go back and talk about Danny Barker, this great New Orleans jazz musician. His wife's song, Blue Lou Barker, she's in the bracket, Don't You Get Me High. But in the 70s, he comes back. He'd been in New York for a long time. He comes back and really just tries to invigorate the New Orleans music community and gives an incredible amount of himself to the city. He starts running a brass band, the Fairview Baptist Brass Band, which is essentially a bunch of kids, and he teaches them traditional New Orleans brass band music. And there are a number of musicians that come straight out of that tradition. Greg Stafford certainly being one. Dr. Michael White played a little bit with them, a little bit with some other bands that were doing a similar thing. Doc Pollen around that time. And this reinvigorates kind of the brass band scene. And what these kids do once they become adolescents and grow into, you know, teenagers and youngsters, is they start playing their own way, which is how new music happens. So you get groups like the Tornado and the Hurricane Brass Band, and then the Dirty Dozen, who are all of a sudden throwing in contemporary styles. They're playing bop. They're playing funk. You get Rebirth in the 80s, and all of a sudden they're incorporating hip hop, and we have You Don't Want to Go to War with the featuring Soulja Slim and Rebirth. And I love this, because what it is traditional jazz. You know, New Orleans brass bands and traditional jazz are married in this really interesting way, but forever in their, you know, 100 plus year history, there's an incorporation of modern music where it's popular melodies and themes are taken and played in the New Orleans style. And that's exactly what you see coming out of the Dozen and Soul Rebels with Stand Up and Get Crunk and Rebirth and the Hot Eight and all these groups that move away from the more traditional sounds of like groups like the Olympia or the Eureka or the Tuxedo, which, you know, don't forget what those groups are doing is playing the popular songs from their era their way. So, you know, it's really the same thing. So let's not get too, you know, far from that and think that they're just changing everything and, you know, they're, you know, ruining the music or whatever. You know, what they're doing is they're playing brass band music with the songs that matter to them today. And I think it's, you know, we all love it. I mean, the brass bands to me kind of form the backbone of New Orleans music, because we know they've played all these styles. They've played opera, they've played rock and roll songs, you know, they play everything, and they make it New Orleans music. You see them from kind of pretty much start to finish in the bracket. And so that's why they're there in the end too, with hip hop as it is featured at the end.
Well, the thing that I liked about that, so the matchup with I'll Fly Away and Go DJ, I'll Fly Away, if I have my history right, Dirty Dozen came directly out of Danny Barker's program in the 70s. So they were, right, one of the first or one of the most well-known. And it feels like throughout New Orleans history, there's always that one guy or the one woman who is the connector, you know? So even, and this is a little bit of a reach, even when you think about Ernie Cado and the Mother-in-Law Lounge and where it was or where it is. And now you got Kermit Ruffins continuing that. And oh, by the way, Dirty Dozen comes out of Danny Barker. And then another decade later, you get Rebirth, who Kermit starts with, right? Helps found, starts with. And you talk about Danny Barker and him sort of going back in and teaching school kids. It made me instantly think about the HBO series Treme and the Wendell Pierce character, right? I'm certain David Simon had that in mind for that character and was thinking about Danny Barker a little bit when Wendell Pierce goes in and becomes a school teacher and is trying to help these kids through love of music, right? And there's just all these ties. And so for me, it's a fun way to sort of lure you in to, again, this kind of across time, but there's always a thread. You know, it's not so different when you hear Lil Wayne or Juvenile. This music is not this completely new thing that doesn't have its roots. You can just with like two names go back 100 years in our music. There was one, and I'm searching for it while we're talking, but then you jump forward to one of my favorite matchups in sort of this part is you have Punk Under Pressure against Gin In My System. If you want to talk about that a little bit, you got Katy Red against Big Frida.
Yeah, I did that. So I will admit to doing that one on purpose. And I actually had in this bracket, I had DJ Jimmy. Let me see if I can find it. I had Where They At with Where They At, DJ Jimmy's version versus T.T. Tucker's version, which these are the songs that are like pointed to as the first bounce song. And they kind of came out at the same time. And these two guys were doing them in a very similar way. And unfortunately for the T.T. Tucker fans, I had to make a cut to get to 64. So if I chose the wrong one, that's my fault. I had those matched up too, cause I wanted to see what people were going to say is kind of what I'm circling back to. And I did the same thing for these two songs just cause I was kind of interested to see what people were going to vote for, you know, Katy Red, who like you talk about kind of like, is known for, you know, as the first sissy bounce artist. And, you know, there's some people pushing back against that right now saying it's bounce and you have bounce artists. Right. And I think that's worth pointing out too. But certainly there is the conversation that she is known as the first sissy bounce artist. So in Big Frida kind of comes a little bit later. These are two of their kind of seminal songs, I think. And so, you know, I wanted to see what other people thought. I think you voted for Katy Red.
Yeah.
Punk Under Pressure. I did too. And I also am sorry to Big Frida, but I just kind of like that song better.
But they both have played such an important part in bounce music, right? And of course, Big Frida got her start with Katy Red. I was on the fence. I went with Punk Under Pressure, also knowing someday I'll have Big Frida on the show. And we can debate that. But it's a fun way. And particularly, you know, we're two white guys having this conversation. I think it might introduce or cause people that don't listen to a lot of bounce music or going back a little bit rap music to dig in a little.
Yeah.
Because there's these themes, again, that go back across all music. And I am drawing a blank. I was trying to go through my notes. There's one of the songs here, maybe by Juvenile, where he name checks every housing project in the city, in the video at least.
Right. Buck Dump Time, I think.
Is yeah. Like, okay. Thank you. All right. So I just hadn't gotten to it.
You know, I think I was going to point out that while we may have picked Punk Under Pressure, it went down pretty hard to get in my system.
It did.
But so this is one of the kind of the elements of bounce that you point out is so one of the things about bounce music is the rhythm, right? It's interesting to listen to DJ Jimmy's Where They At, to listen to Bounce for the Juvenile by Juvenile, which comes out on DJ Jimmy's record in the early 90s. And Juvenile's like 16 in this song. And so, you know, if you're wondering why that's his stage name. You can hear the beat in those early records, and you can hear how it's taken up a notch as you get into the, you know, the next decade, and it speeds up quite a bit. But it's born from the same thing, so that's kind of an interesting thing too. That, you know, to look back at these early bounce songs, but there are other elements of the style than just the beat. So one of them is kind of the MC style, where you're doing a lot of it's less narrative driven and a lot more, there's call and response. There's kind of these single lines kind of shouted out, and you can hear that in Ha, right? Where he hits a line, ends it with Ha, hits a line, ends it with Ha. And you can hear it in DJ Jimmy's Where They At. But there's also this, a lot of the songs call out neighborhoods. It's really something that you see over and over again in a lot, especially the early songs, right? And they'll talk about which neighborhood or ward they're from, which, call out different housing projects. You see that in with buck jump time. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it's in Where They At too. So you can kind of see these threads in Bounce kind of come together. You know, talking about the neighborhoods is really, again, and I think this connection is interesting, happens in development of jazz too. It's very neighborhood based, and all these guys talk about the neighborhood they're from and the music from their neighborhood, you know, crossing Canal Street or not crossing Canal Street. And like, you know, it's a big part of the music. So I'm glad that you called that out, and I think you see it in Ha too in the video, which I love that music video, so check it out. That's Ha. It's Juvenile with Ha, and it's shot in New Orleans. A lot of their videos are shot in New Orleans, and so it's part of that calling out the neighborhood.
For me, the very last matchup, Joe Avery's Blues, which is a really traditional Mardi Gras Second Lawn song. You have Olympia Brass there. I think a lot of New Orleanians, even if they don't know the song, they know it with the rhythm. Bump, 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 ba-da-da-da-da-da, bump, bump, right? And you got that against Buck Jump Time. As we'll talk about in a minute, I've kept you a long time. And as we start to wrap up, we'll go through a couple of my picks. I love Buck Jump Time because it sort of does call out the neighborhoods. And I also like, and I mentioned it, I think, in the earlier episode, I want people to go find out what buck jumping is, because it's such an important part of second line culture in New Orleans. And so even the fact that Gregory Diamanti Fresh chose the name, they had that same idea about people wouldn't necessarily know. The people they were making the music for in New Orleans would know what buck jumping was. But even my guess is across the country, people wouldn't know. And certainly probably a lot of people in the white community wouldn't know. And that music wasn't made for the white community. But I think there's just so much when you kind of peel back the layer a little bit on that song. I'm just fascinated with it.
Yeah. And it goes back to this. It's dance music, right? And they're talking about dancing. And you're right. It is interesting. It's being paired with kind of the second line song. I mean, the song is called Second Line, right? I mean, it's Joe Avery's Blues. But no, people don't know the name of this song. You know, it is the second line song. You're totally right. And it's one of the reasons I had to include it, right? I was like, you know, this is an actual song. And it's got this, you know, you've got the kind of beat in there, but it also starts with that. Da, 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 da. It's the trumpet player calling out, hey, we're about to hit this. We're about to go, you know. They play it before the coming out at Second Line Parades. They play it when they go under the bridge at Second Line Parades, under the I-10 on Claiborne. And you just, I mean, you can't be in New Orleans and not hear this song. So, but it's also, it being so tied with Second Lines and buck jumping is this dance style that's happening at Second Lines, you know?
Right.
But it's being played, it's a bounce song, you know? So again, it's like you said, it's all these things kind of coming together. And, you know, I think that you're right on too, when you're saying, you know, this is Black New Orleans music, both the Second Lines and bounce, you know? A lot of us in the city, you know, the white New Orleanians have certainly embraced, and in a lot of times commercialized and commodified the music too. And I think that's an important part of the discussion that we, like you said, two white guys talking about this need to be aware of and think about, you know, when like we advertise the city to the world as this place to come hear this stuff. We should be, because it's special but we also need to take care of it and understand where it's coming from and respect the communities and cultures that are making the music, instead of just grabbing and say, you know, this is New Orleans music, this is my music, you know. And so I think that's an important part of the conversation that we all need to be thinking about as we listen to it and love it and appreciate it.
Well said. And I think that, you know, it's also, you and I are recording this conversation in late June 2020, and enough time has passed going through just these couple months going through the brackets when you guys first released it, and set against the backdrop of 2020 and COVID and the Black Lives Matter and the protests and the responses and all of that. So much of New Orleans culture is on the backs and from the African American communities, and even here you've mentioned it going all the way back to slavery in Congo Square. But I think the brackets provide a way to do that. So you can do it very surface level and kind of go through it and what's catchy, and you can go down rabbit holes and you can go down history lessons. I hope that what the brackets do for people and people listening today are that they take some time. Look, you're stuck home. You can't do things. Things are different. Things are tense. It's a good way to kind of explore our culture and all of these musicians and their own stories. You know, you talk about Jelly Roll Morton, and one of the things Jelly Roll Morton was sort of maybe tarnished his legacy a little bit is people said, well, he would exaggerate. He would take credit for things that maybe he didn't do. But he also lived his whole life with people taking advantage of him and his music, right? And I think this is like a prime, like if you're feeling bad right now, if you're struggling with everything going on, this is a nice way to get some education and have some fun and kind of take a second look at the music that you listen to and why, and also maybe music you haven't heard. Because we will not go through all my picks, but I did want to mention to you and get your thoughts on where I ended up with my final four. Was Indian Red against I Wish I Could Shimmy Like My Sister Kate, which is just a terrific song, against Southern Nights and I'll Fly Away. And so I, you know, there was no intent. And then when I got to the end, it was Indian Red and Southern Nights. And I didn't send you my answer, but my guess is you could guess it. My pick overall would be Southern Nights. That song reminds me of being a kid. It reminds me of the country. I know that Alan Toussaint wrote that about visiting his relatives in the country in Opelousas. And to me, Alan Toussaint is New Orleans. He's the thread. You know, now that's carried on by others, but goes back through so many of the musicians that we talked about. But I did want to mention, if people of those four, the one that probably a lot of people don't know is Shimmy Like My Sister Kate, is such a fun song. And what I also liked about that is you could close your eyes and picture somebody like Irma Thomas singing that. You could picture Marsha Ball, who is not a New Orleanian by birth, but performs at Jazz Fest most years. And I think you could even see somebody like Amisha Lake perform that song. So it's just kind of, that was a fun one. But the moment I saw Southern Night and Alan Toussaint, that was going to be hard to beat for me.
I love that song so much. I think, I mean, he is so it was such an absolutely incredible musician and incredible force in New Orleans music for so long. I know you had this connection with him that you talked about, which, you know, I loved hearing. So, yeah, I mean, wow, you can't go wrong with Southern Night. Southern Nights, I think it was matched up against Irma Thomas early on, and they had this connection, and that's, you know, I'm sorry about that, because I didn't want either of them to lose that round. I love Irma. I think she's one of the great treasures we have in this city, you know. And you think back, you go through this bracket, and so many, you know, it's sad to say that so many of the people in kind of that rhythm and blues section, rock and roll section, have passed away in just the past few years, you know. Alan Toussaint and Dr. John, and, you know,
and Fats. And
Fats. Fats. So we need to, like, I don't know. Irma Thomas is a treasure, and I can't say that enough. And she has so many amazing songs. And talk about, you know, you talk about the Jelly Roll Morton being ripped off. Well, what about Irma Thomas? You know, come on, Otis Redding. You know, she writes Ruler of My Heart, and then he gets Pain in My Heart is this huge hit. You know, the Stones are doing Time Is on My Side. So, you know, let's give some credit where credit is
well
due.
And we're right at the end of an hour and 15 minutes or so of talking, and this is the first mention of Irma Thomas, right?
Yeah,
and her right. Contemporaries are Aretha Franklin and Patti LaBelle, and she hasn't enjoyed the commercial success. But that matchup with her and Alan Toussaint, when I saw that, I just shook my head, because if you were going to pick two people that would sort of be the king and queen of New Orleans music in a contemporary sense, it would be them, I think. And now with his passing a couple years back, she was the treasure anyway, but she is certainly the treasure of New Orleans. But that kind of points out how much fun and how hard these brackets are, Eric, as we start to come to a close, that you have somebody like Irma Thomas that we hardly mention, and there's so much good music. The music in New Orleans runs deep and across time and just up and down in any of these time periods that we're talking about. I just want to thank you for doing it. It sent me down this 6-week rabbit hole. I have spent a lot of free moments plowing through the catalog and plowing through going and pulling books and pulling videos on YouTube and really studying something. A lot of this I didn't know as well as I do now. I think that it's a lasting thing. People can go and do this on their own. And hopefully, as you pointed out, really appreciate the music maybe on different levels, whether it's music you know or it's a genre that maybe you aren't as familiar with. But I thank you so much for not only spending time with me today, but for putting this together. I hope it was as much fun for you as it was for me.
Yeah, it was a blast to be here and get to talk about it with you today. So thanks for having me back on. And like you said, picking a winner was the last point of this whole thing. It's to just celebrate the music. So I hope other people, listeners, are having the chance to have as much fun and enjoyment from it as I know I have and you have. And so that was the goal, and just happy to talk about it a little bit. So thank you.
Thank you. Well done on the brackets. And again, we'll put links to the brackets and to the THNOC website and to the exhibit, the New Orleans Medley exhibit. It'll all be at our website, beyondbourbonst.com/115. For everyone listening, we certainly appreciate it. If you haven't had a chance to dig in, go do that and spend some time. Do it with your family like I did. It's a lot of fun. I appreciate everybody listening.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.